is, you interlock the two.
Now stretch them quite as
soccer and the fifth.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
I felt like a reptile. Like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.
Yeah, cool.
Do you need to clap or anything?
Nah. Okay. Should be all right. Just in case.
So do I have to say to you, are we rolling?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's like standard for full reptile radio.
Yeah. Okay. Are we rolling, Slim?
Yeah.
Okay. Hello and welcome to Full Reptile Radio. We are back.
Yep.
We're back, dude.
We're back with the new show. Well, I'm not exactly Dan, but...
Dude, it's been a while and honestly, you'll be a perfect supplement, so it's good. So just to fill everyone in, obviously, we've done Full Reptile Radio for years and years, and we sort of just hit a spot where everything has been the busiest it's ever been. So... we've seen everyone's messages popping up and saying, oh, when are you coming back? When are you going to record another one? And ultimately, me, you and Dan have been having the Full Reptile Radio conversations mm-hmm. every week anyway, but we just don't record it because obviously, well, we haven't had time and to sit down and obviously put everyone through it. And you have always been behind the camera. You have been the third guy in the room mm-hmm. every time. So me and you got together and we thought, well, why wouldn't we record? Because... well, it just makes sense. And obviously we can interact with you guys again and catch up with everyone and just chat some shit.
Yeah, so we're going to create a separate channel for this as well. So if you obviously, this is the new channel, just purely focused on Full Reptile Radio. And we're going to be making some other stuff along the way, you know, some UFC London content. And there's loads of cool events that are coming up. So we're going to be doing some like top five videos and, you know, loads of good stuff. But this is a new channel separate from... the normal Full Reptile channel. So yeah, if you're a fan of the Full Reptile channel, then yeah, we're here as well, back.
So the nice thing is, watch, hopefully, because obviously what we found was over the years that we were recording is that you guys are so loyal and so brilliant that you've been tuning in every week. We want to involve you guys even more. So like, obviously, if there's a chance to get involved in comments or if we're doing a bit of trivia or whatever it is, please feel free to get involved like you always have. And we can obviously just keep building on the nonsense that we talk each week with a little bit of fight talk. But there will be so many different things. And like you were saying about new top fives and the history of MMA and all these crazy things that we've been sort of building on. But now we're going to meet probably once a week and get this out there and obviously catch up with you guys again, which is, I'm really looking forward to it, dude. It's been a while.
Yeah. How was your Christmas anyway?
Awesome. Oh, dude. Yeah. I think it's the first year that I had to have a word with myself and I sat myself down because every Christmas day or Boxing Day, I end up upsetting someone and having a massive fight. And it's normally from the most like... humble place of, I don't know, trying to do the right thing. And I don't know what anyone else is like, but obviously I've been with Stace, what, 25 years. So you kind of run out of things to buy. And you both do that thing where you completely agree, we're not buying anything, nothing, don't buy me anything, I don't need anything. And I was sat in December, working from home, watching TV, and these orders start coming through, like deliveries for Stace. I said, oh, what have you got? Because normally if it's for the girls, she goes, oh, look, I've bought this or I bought that. Oh, nothing. I said, yo, that's not for me, is it? She's like, yeah, but just something little. I'm like, no, because if you do something little, then I've got to do something little. And it's difficult to try and build on what you've had in the past or whatever to try and get her something that she actually wants. And obviously, most Christmas days is normally filled with, I'll take it back or whatever, and then it's caused a bit of a ruckus. So this year, I made a point of not doing that, so... She still returned 25% of her presents, but at the same time, I didn't let it affect me as it did before. So
yeah, it's hard. I had a pretty good Christmas, like first year with in a new place as well. So that's pretty good. But we went to America,
dude.
I went to North Carolina. That was pretty cool.
And how different was that to over here Christmas?
I mean, to be honest, we didn't actually do a lot. We just kind of hung around at the house because my partner's parents live out there, and they've got a new plot of land, like bought some land and like built a house on it. So it's like a kind of a new community that's kind of being built.
Oh, wow.
So it's like stages of coming together. So there wasn't like a lot to do around there, but it was pretty cool. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's nice to get away to not do anything.
Yeah. And then we spent a couple of days in New York, and New York's obviously pretty Dude. Special place at Christmas.
Especially but, Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was great. Great, great at Christmas. Great New Year. Yeah.
Oh, mate. Well, what did you get? Did you get anything good this year? Because obviously, is this your first year together?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So that's an important one. I mean, just to give you a bit of background, our first year together was 1998. And I bought Stace a teddy bear, not a sexy lingerie teddy, because I wasn't that brave. I'd only been with her a month. I bought from Clinton's Cards a teddy bear that sits about this tall. So it's about 3 or 4 foot, and it's called Big Jeff. It nearly got me killed. And also, we've still got it. And she bought me a Playboy Bunny ring, which is obviously not something you wear nowadays, but it was cool at the time. But I can remember buying her, because obviously we got together in November. And like when you're young, I was 17. Like, you don't always expect things to last. So I was like, yeah, whatever. She's got cracking boobs. Off we went. So I ended up panic buying. I think it was Christmas Eve or the day before Christmas Eve. I was walking through Derby, and it was in like Clinton's Card, something like that. So I picked it up, and it was as big as me, because obviously I've grown a little bit since then. And I was carrying it through town to get to the bus, and I was being followed by this guy the whole way. Proper shady looking dude. And I was like, fucking hell. I was on my own, terrified, like trying to carry this massive teddy and also whatever the shit I had with me, which is always a ridiculous amount. So I'm walking to the bus, and this guy's literally following me the whole way. And it's not like he was there for someone else. He was there for me. And I get to the bus station. I'm sat just waiting, just praying for this bus to pull up. I'm like, God damn, I hate this. This guy eventually came over, and he was like really sketchy. He was like, oh, mate, nice teddy, what are you saying? I was like, it's for my girlfriend. He was like, yeah, sell it me. And I was like, why?
So he wasn't following you, he was following the
he
teddy.
He was following the teddy, basically. I'd bought the last one, and he wanted it for like one of his kids. And I was like, I can't.
That's like that, you know, that Arnold Schwarzenegger film where he's, Jingle All the Way, where he's looking for the last...
Cool it.
Looking for the last... Turbo Man.
Mate, that's actually, strangely, talking about Christmas, because I think one of the big things, obviously, is the diehard debate about Christmas. Is it a Christmas movie or not?
I had this debate, actually. I've had it a couple of times.
Where'd you sit?
I mean, I've only seen it like once all the way through, to be honest. I've never been a big Die Hard fan.
What?
I know,
is this
the
end of the podcast? is this finished before it's began?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I've seen it all the way through, like a couple of times maybe, you know, but I've never been a big
John
fan
McClane
of it.
Fan.
So I can't really say whether it's Christmas. I guess, no.
No, well, even Bruce Willis came out and he said it isn't.
Yeah, I mean...
Which... I suppose, I don't know. I mean, it's set in Christmas time and I consider it a Christmas film, but I think this it kind of arcs back to what you had at the time. Us coming from a more not so digital heavy era, like growing up, you had certain videotapes, and I know me and Dan have talked about this in the past, but you'd have a videotape that is your tape, or you'd have a set number of films.
Yeah, yeah.
Like as kids... Because I had a load of cousins and aunties and uncles, and a genius stroke by them back in the day. So there's let's just use my mum's side of family for argument's sake. There was like Lisa and Ben, which are my cousins, and my auntie and uncle. So my mum would make an agreement. Instead of buying all of them a present each, she'll buy their family a Christmas tape. So Cool Runnings or Free Willy or whatever it was at the time, and they'd buy us one. So it's kind of cool because... I mean, even if a video was £10 back in the day, it's like £2.50 a person. Yeah, yeah. Happy days, you got that out of the way. So I think a lot of your, like, I don't know, your like upbringing is what you had at the time. Whereas Netflix now, you can literally search or Netflix, Prime, Disney, whatever it is, you can find whatever you want.
Yeah, it's so funny how, because one of Sue's brothers works for SB Nation.
Okay.
And when we were over there at Christmas, he basically gets like free samples of new films that are coming out.
Oh, shit.
Or like films that are just coming out, but he gets them on disc.
Yeah, yeah. I used to get
no
them.
No one's got a DVD player.
Very illegally.
Yeah. But no one had DVD players, so you can't really use them. I think he had like you get a code and you could put it into the website or whatever, but...
So you actually couldn't play it because
We brought them home still. I gave a couple of to my dad and that, but...
That's cool, though.
Yeah. Because he's still got like three DVD players.
I suppose that's like pulling a VHS player out of the loft, isn't it? You know, I think I've got someone somewhere.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah.
But I suppose like, because us, like we always, even with the kids, like The Borrowers was a big Christmas movie. And it's just because it was on once and we watched it as a family. So now it's kind of a like the same as Hook and obviously Home Alone and all the classics. But I can't remember what got us onto the topic of Christmas movies, but...
Die Hard
is, in my opinion, a Christmas movie because it was, I mean, it's set around there and you always watch it, but it's a weird one that, like, depending on what you had, like, for me, with Stace, when she was growing up, she had The Goonies, Mighty Ducks and something else that was, like, her go-to. So she was off school ill because it's not like you had libraries back in the day of movies. Like, not well, some people did, but it's not like you had thousands. So can you remember when DVDs came out, everyone got obsessed with collecting them and then realised they were worth fuck all? Well, I sold my whole collection. I had like 1,000 DVDs and I think I sold it to the biggest dude at this car boot for like £100. And honestly, dude, there were steel books in there. There was so many cool shit, but just it was in the way. So because I didn't have Goonies and Mighty Ducks, ours was like overboard and far and away... Crocodile Dundee and Short Circuit. But the thing is, because you watch it at the time, like we were talking with Dan earlier about the Turtles movies when we were kids, or especially our generation, you don't notice the shit animatronics and all the bad bits because you're just desperate to see the Turtles.
Yeah.
Whereas I show my kids now and they're like, they look at me like I'm some sort of fucking maniac. They're like,
yeah.
Dad, why are we watching this? This is dog shit. I'm like, this is the best. And it's the same like with Crocodile Dundee and Short Circuit, because it wasn't in Stacey's world. She hates watching. She's like, this is fucking horrible. Whereas for me, I'm like, this is like the core of everything.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny you say about like the animatronics and stuff of that time, but like there's some films from then that still look good as they were, you know, like they can keep up to date with like latest films now, like Blade Runner or something like that.
That's it. But there's some things that will hold up, but I think it's your memory that serves more of it holding up. So like Men Behaving Badly, Bottom, Red Dwarf, all these cool things that you grew up with that sort of formed the foundation of you that you try and watch now and you're like, you kind of can see that it's a little bit shit.
Yeah, especially in sitcoms, like the comedy's like old, the jokes are old. I mean, a lot of it is still funny, but it's like when you watch like Only Fools and Horses or something. Man. Like it's still funny,
yeah.
But then there's jokes that are just like,
risky as fuck. Yeah. This is a good point for audience participation, because if you can tell me how many times on average you think the UK household would say, you won't be able to say that now.
That
must be the most staple thing of watching vintage TV, because it doesn't matter what it is. There's always a case you're like, oh, and it's not even like you're completely triggered by it, but you could tell anything Harry Enfield, anything Fast Show, even like Men Behaving Badly and Only Fools and Horses. There were so many references and stuff that you're like,
mate,
you can't do that, man. But
the times, I guess. But
yeah, shit changes, man. Shit changes quick.
What? Were you, obviously, there wasn't any UFCs over the holidays either, as well. So was it 4 weeks without anything?
Devil, man. Gutted.
Yeah. What was the last one? It was Cannoneer Strickland before Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that kind of fizzled a bit, didn't it? Because what did we have before that? It was a big card, wasn't it?
And then we had 281. No, sorry, 282, which was
who we got?
Oh, Jesus, who was the headline? 282.
It wasn't the Bronx, was it?
No, it was because it was Jan Blachowicz.
That's it. Ankalaev. Oh yeah, it all fell out, didn't it?
Yeah, because it all fell out last minute. Well, Yuri got injured.
Interesting though, and he kind of fell on his sword, didn't he?
A
stand-up guy. But do you think he'll come back the same? Do you think Yuri will come back the same?
I think so, yeah. I mean, he's a different kind of human being. I don't know, there's just something about him that's like almost, he's got an aura around him,
like, not just the haircut.
Nah, well, maybe a little
bit. That adds to it, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Like, you know, if you give anyone that, like, batshit crazy top knot.
That was actually one thing I was going to ask you, because it came up as an article today. Like, who's the scariest UFC fighter ever? Or currently, ever. Who would you say is the scariest? Like, someone you just wouldn't ever want to meet.
Is above and beyond. But I don't know if that is partly the language barrier. And also, where he's grown up and where he's been brought up, because
Charles Oliveira's got that about him as well. Like, just in terms,
he has. But and then he puts his glasses on, and you're like, oh, okay. Do you know? Or he's blonde, and it's like it kind of knocks the edges off it a little bit. Because I know when I met Stylebender, it was insane because he's so tall and quite a dominant figure. And he was the nicest guy, and he spent loads of time. And there was, we were literally stood on the side of the stage waiting for him to go for the press conference with I think it was the first fight against Robert Whittaker when we were in Vegas. And I stood talking to him, but there was this aura about him that he was just a fucking terrifying dude. But at the same time, big smile, and he was playing the game completely. But I don't know if that's because he's had a relatively normal upbringing. I'm not saying that Pereira hasn't had a relatively normal upbringing, but you know, Brazil, and it's like, it's a different kind of normal. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, it's like the Dagestan guys as well.
Dude.
Like, just in terms of environment.
Everything's
like great.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, it's just, you would not try and take their fucking dinner money, would you? Do you know what I mean? So like Khabib was so unassuming and dominant that I think you could probably talk your way out of a fucking arse kicking. Do you know what I mean? So there's certain people that you could be like, look, I'm meek and I'm nothing, don't worry about me. But whereas with someone like Pereira, isn't it more like Genghis Khan? Do you know what I mean? It's, well, I need to get over there and you're in the way, so it's probably quicker just to kill you.
It was like that interview he did with Ariel.
Dude.
And throughout the whole interview, he didn't drop eye contact.
At all, or blink.
Yeah.
Like, he just... I don't know. I suppose there's been a few in the past, but
it was like Yoel Romero. My two was Alex Pereira and Yoel Romero, but that's like modern kind of, you know, like modern MMA. But.
Well, with people like Yoel, he's kind of terrifying, but then he's kind of crazy as well. And he's also got like a really sensitive soul because he's quite religious. Do you know what I mean? So it's not like he comes from parts unknown, like The Undertaker. He's more just chiseled out of granite, and he's got that, it's the same thing. It's that broken English kind of thing. So you don't always know if someone's personality is completely coming across, because selfishly, we don't learn Portuguese or Spanish or whatever it is. We just wait to see them just try and communicate with us either way. But like back in the day, you had your Tank Abbotts and your Cabbage Carreras, like all these guys that, I suppose because the history is so vast, unfortunately, even if they were the most terrifying motherfucker, they got humbled as well themselves. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
the
character didn't, it wasn't always as big as what it is now. Like when you look at someone like Lee Murray, so Lee Murray, British MMA fighter and massive star in Cage Warriors, actually fought Anderson Silva and took him 5 rounds. So Anderson Silva, when he showed up, not just in Pride, but in the UFC, obviously smashed through Chris Lieben, smashed through Rich Franklin, and was just an absolute animal. Terrifying, but so, so graceful at doing it. So when you consider Lee Murray was a rock hard motherfucker that had a history, or there was a story behind it, that he knocked out Tito in a night outside a nightclub in London. And it's like a really famous story. But when you consider how high profile Tito was at the time, and then you got Lee Murray that then came in. He only fought in the UFC once and won. But then he was part of the biggest, was it a diamond heist or like a robbery in the UK? But they've still not found the money. So he, I think he's in Egypt. I think his dad's Egyptian or something like that. Don't obviously quote me. You know the story. But he then escaped and sort of hid out, and he's got this big mural of him tapping out Jorge Rivera, I think so. And he triangled him, got a big mural on the side of his house, and then got arrested. So he's doing bird at the minute. But it's like, that is a scary fucking dude, because he's not just talking it and like giving it the whole like Charlie Big Potatoes. He was smashing people up, looking like a rock hard badass, and then he's now serving time.
I think it also heavily relies on like how people finish fights as well. You know, like Pereira, because he's scary to look at, but the way he finishes fights and the way he fights is also like super intimidating.
Because
like,
it's that stoic kind of...
Yeah. Only certain fighters have it.
Yeah, well, look at someone like Jan, whose power... Well, like when he hit Luke Rockhold, I didn't know if he was going to get back up. And it was kind of terrifying, like almost like the Ngannou power. So like you've got the Ngannou, the Jan power... But then you actually speak to Jan and he's an absolute sweetheart. He's a puppy dog and he's lovely. Do you know what I mean? And it's kind of like even with Francis Ngannou, you know, when he knocked out Overeem, like that was close to a hate crime. Do you know what I mean? And you look at that sort of thing. But it's not the same scary. It's a turned on competition. Whereas, Alex Pereira, it's... For me, he's probably he's holding the flag at the minute.
Yeah.
But there's obviously people that are going to beat him. There's like Hamzat and the rest of them. That they are a different level.
Yeah, see, Pereira, I think it was amazing what he did against Izzy, like to become champion, especially like not having that many fights in the UFC. But I think there is, like Dan said before as well, like there is people in that division that can definitely like beat him, like really good wrestlers. Like even Vittori, I think, would give him a pretty tough fight.
It'd be a much more interesting competition, because I think sometimes when someone sits at the top of a table and they are like John Jones and he's cleared out a division multiple times, like if you imagine, you look at light heavyweight now, how many times the belt's changed hands?
Yeah.
If Gustafsson had that opportunity and the John Jones too was actually Gustafsson against Jan or just Gustafsson against Glover, he could have been the champ. But the problem is we can only work on what we've currently got. And the problem is, because no one's leveled Pereira at the minute, and then you've got the aerial interview where it was a fucking intense interview, wasn't it? It's kind of the superhero status just goes up, because it's a bit like Conor. You know when Conor was calling his shot and then he was stating when he was going to do it? And the problem was he wasn't wrong. Do you know what I mean? It just built, and the whole time it was that intrigue of this guy's something special. Do you know what I mean? And
if you can manifest that kind of energy and maintain it.
And the thing is, as much as it works so well when it works, there are loads of examples where you've got someone giving it full Charlie Big Potatoes and it doesn't come off. Do you know what I mean? And it's like almost like Strickland this weekend. Like I saw an interview with him and he's attacking like the fact the guy's French. He's going, French people are known for giving up and like he's cowardice. And the problem is, I really like Strickland because I don't know him as a person, but because he always sort of rattles the cage, he's kind of, I don't know if he does it to put himself in a position where he has to back it up. I don't know. Obviously there's a lot of different things that we don't know that fighters go through. But for me, I don't know. I don't always like to be the loudest. I am the loudest one, but I don't like to be the loudest one in a fight situation, because then you got to back it up. And the people that he's facing, even like Cannonier, he showed him, look, there are people up here that can put you on your ass. It's tricky because, you want to be the one that's making all the noise. Because like Paddy Pimblett is obviously now, he's surging towards that poster boy. But when you consider the competition that Paddy's had in comparison to what Conor had, as much as the trajectory is very similar, it's not the same caliber of fighter that he's been taking on. And obviously in his last one, he went to a decision, which obviously is real controversial, but even Bisping came out and was like, I think he needs to calm down a little bit.
Yeah. I think that it's all to do with like personality types, though, isn't it? I mean, like you can be, but like going back to Strickland, like the thing is with Strickland, like I don't think he gives a shit, like if he wins or loses in a sense.
Yeah.
Like if he loses, he'll still be the same fighter the next time around.
Yeah.
Like he won't ever kind of drop that act, I don't think.
No.
It's just who he is.
It's just part of his makeup.
But then obviously guys like Colby, when it is like an actual character, it's like, yeah.
Well, you've met Colby.
Yeah.
So is it a complete act?
Well, I mean, we obviously put that clip out of him. It was it was Colby Lawler.
Was it in New York?
In Newark. Obviously before COVID and stuff, but it was at an open workout, and there was fans there and whatnot, and he was like walking down the line, and we were filming, and he was just like signing autographs, and then this one kid came up to him, he was just like super humble, and the thing is, you don't know, obviously we're there filming and stuff, so you don't know if he's putting it on for the camera, but I don't think it was. I think it was pretty genuine, and
I think
there's another side to him that people hadn't seen before and haven't seen since, I don't think. But
so that would probably be more that he flipped because he's used to putting it on for the camera, if he wasn't necessarily aware that you were there as much because he wasn't.
Yeah, the thing is, it's when it's a media environment, people act differently anyway, you know?
Yeah, true. And I think, obviously, the character side of things has always been a fan favourite, because regardless of how you got into MMA, you've normally followed some sort of sport or some sort of story in the past. And I think even if you look at Dan's history in fighting, he was often the needle to like aggravate people, because it's the British way. That's what we do. It can be banter, and it's easily banter, but if you choose to take offense, I mean, it's a bigger fucking problem, but if you choose to, then it creates intrigue, because you've got certain people like Strickland, or like Izzy, or whoever they are, Connor, doesn't matter. Your people, because they've been so vocal, you're either going to get supporters that are tuning in to see you win and back up what you said, or they're tuning in to see you getting starched. Do you know what I mean? It's one of the, like with Connor, it's complete Marmite. You love him or you hate him. But that doesn't stop the pay-per-views. That doesn't stop the intrigue, because people will tune in to watch you get smashed. It's Jake Paul, perfect example.
Mm.
Like, the fact that he's gone to PFL, I think is genius.
Oh, man. I think it's such a good move for him.
Yeah.
And just for MMA in general. I think it's really good that he's done that, and he's done it not well. I mean, because, well, UFC don't have him. And
exactly.
Like, you know, the PFL, obviously, a fairly, like, new and upcoming promotion, and like looking to make big moves as well. So I think it's brilliant. Yeah. Well, I can't wait.
The thing that I love is because the rivalry between him and Dana, in my opinion, can only force good things.
Yeah.
Because he's bringing a spotlight on Fight to Pay. He's bringing a spotlight on a lot of different things, and he's doing that without experiencing it. So you've been at a fight week. I've been at a fight week, and you know how intense all of these things are. So forget the training, forget the fighting, forget the sponsorship, all the other shit that goes with it. Fight week is a beast of itself. So he's already defending the fighters and the most important elements of this sport before he's experienced it. So surely once he's gone through that sort of ringer, win, lose or draw, he's going to have an opinion coming out the back end of it. And because he's already built his channel essentially and grown up with them, the loyalty that he's got from this YouTube following is insane. And obviously, if he can pass that on to PFL and raise that profile and all the rest of it, it's going to be so interesting to see how that affects UFC, Bellator and all the rest of them. Because, I mean, what we've seen from the PFL, it feels to me that they've kind of, well, they're built up of some of UFC, some of Bellator, some of this, some of that, but it's all OGs that are basically bringing together, almost like Captain Planet. Do you know what I mean? They're just bringing together these different elements to make a really good promotion.
Yeah, yeah.
And I suppose the one thing I'd like to see more than anything, and it doesn't have to be his first fight, but I'd love to see the Jake Paul Ben Askren rematch.
Yeah. So that's the thing. It sets him up for like even the Tyron Woodley rematch, but in MMA, like that would do really well, I think. And then if PFL signed someone like Tyron Woodley or Ben Askren, I'm not sure how it would work, but there's so many good fights for him. And it is kind of, I don't think it's, he's not going to be put into any of the weight classes. It's like his own, or like a super fight league.
Oh, is it?
Is that what it is?
I've seen bits, but I've not fully delved in because...
Yeah, so it could be, you know, whoever, I guess.
Well, because the one thing that bothered me more than anything, because I love boxing. I've got no problem with boxing. But there's always been this massive debate between boxing and MMA. And the problem is, it's like comparing cricket and golf. Yeah, there's balls involved, there's people involved, and it's a sport, but it's not the same. It's so different. And the worst thing is, because boxing has been around a lot longer, a lot of that sort of side of things and the culture that comes with boxing, of it being a beautiful sport and all the rest of it, is that they kind of shit on MMA, or they don't see that the craft that's involved in it, and obviously the jiu-jitsu, the wrestling, the grappling, all the rest of it, which comes into it. So when we had the James Toney freak show with Randy Couture, it wasn't like it was like done and out of the way, because James Toney was a dangerous guy, but Randy just ankle picked him and subbed him. So because obviously Jake Paul's always been boxing, whenever he'd mention someone, like him calling out Paddy Pimblett, he's like me calling out my little dog. Do you know what I mean? It's even if Paddy could piece him up and actually look good and move around and all the rest of it, they're still nowhere near the same weight.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's one of them where it's got to be fair, but I don't think you can really take anything away from Jake Paul.
Oh, no. Like, I mean, I don't particularly... Well, it's like, it's not really a dislike or like thing. It's just like, he's just there and I'll probably tune into what he's doing.
Yeah.
And I can appreciate what he has done.
That's it. I can't help but respect what he's done, because not only is he sort of, he's mentioned it, he's put the gloves on, he's done it, he's obviously trained. And there wasn't there some steroid sort of peak or something with the Tyron Woodley fight, the second one? But...
Oh, yeah. What? Is it being fixed?
Well, whatever it was.
Yeah, you know? It was like that with all of them, I think. Someone's come out with some theory about it being fixed, but, you know.
I just think there's not really anywhere for him to hide, and I can't help but take my hat off to him, because if anyone has ever been in the world of they feel they can handle themselves and someone has taken them down at jiu-jitsu and just dominated them, mate, it's such a humbling sport. It's amazing, because you don't necessarily get hurt, but you get shown, you fuck around, you find out. I mean, I can remember telling Dan before, I went to a seminar at Forth. And I was looking down the queue, and there's like a whole row of people. There's one little guy at the end, and he looked, I think he worked at the little Tesco near me, and I was like, I could fucking have him. Easy. So I thought all day, if that's the only guy I tap, no problem. And he smashed the shit through me, honestly. Yeah. And he did it with a big grin on his face, and the whole time he was beating me, he was telling me what to do to defend what he was doing. So it's such a nice culture, because it is a constantly for sure. Like...
he's trying to teach embrace. You how yeah. he's...
No, don't put your hand there. I wouldn't do that. And you're like, well, what would you do? It's like, be better at jiu-jitsu, you prick. And I don't know. The thing is, if Jake Paul finds himself on the ground, is that explosive energy enough for him to get back up? Is his college wrestling enough for him? But the same thing applies. You're going to be curious to see what happens to him. So we're going to tune in.
100%.
And, I mean, this time last year, it was a joke. It was a bit of a laugh. It was a bit stupid. But this time next year, he could have a belt around his waist. Do you know what I mean?
And yeah. Well, he's kind of, well, he's joined up the YouTube boxing with like, it's
legit.
More or less because it's its own thing now, isn't it? I mean, the term like YouTube boxing, just as in terms of like people from the sport, like old people from the sport fighting like YouTubers and like, you know, younger people. He's kind of made it into his own thing, but he's kind of joined them now. By joining PFL, he's like...
He's legitimised the whole
for that.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as someone to fly a flag, I mean, I don't think he's out of the way offensive. I mean, he's enough offensive to be able to get your attention. But the problem is, and not to quote Dana White, but fighting's in our blood and we get it and we like it. And the problem is, he said that many times that it's true. It doesn't matter if it was Aldi versus like Waitrose or if it was Ford versus Vauxhall. You would tune in because you want to see, I wonder if that person could best that person. And ultimately, that's where mixed martial arts was born. It was born because it could have been a pub conversation. And it's like, we all know a guy that did karate from when he was four. You're like, he's fucking mad, rock hard. Or even growing up watching Van Damme or watching Stallone or watching Arnold Schwarzenegger. All these different people that you're like, yeah, he's rock hard. But then Jet Li comes along and you're like,
yeah,
how the fuck can Jet Li beat Stallone? But he really could. And I suppose because that was justified within the first couple of UFCs by Hoist, it has always made it such a who knows kind of sport. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I think it's going to be interesting and kind of exciting. And I'm really looking forward to PFL because it just feels like they're kind of getting it right.
Yeah, well, the thing is as well, they've got so many like up and coming stars as well, like Brendan Loughnane is like sick. Like the couple of English guys, like what's her name? Oh God, I forgot her name. Dakota DeShava and who else? Oh, I forgot their names. Jesus.
Sorry, they might not be watching because this is the first one back. So we've got our lawyers.
I forgot his name. Jesus. I'm going to have to look it up.
You look that up.
Yeah.
So obviously with PFL coming in, it's just nice to have extra because every so often I'll be watching.
So bad with names, sorry.
Dude, tell me about it. The amount of times I have to remember who they've fought to then go on the online to find their record.
Simeon Powell. Okay. Yeah, yeah. No Simeon worries. Powell, Dakota DeShava, like Brendan Loughnane, like the good British stars are up and coming. It's pretty exciting for those guys.
But they've got, for me, I think because I've been watching it since, say, 96, as soon as I've got someone that I recognise, I'm all in. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter if it's someone old school like, I don't know, Matt Hughes, Josh Neer, like one of the old school guys that I'm like, I recognise that guy. I kind of want to see what they're doing now and how they're getting on. And when you look at it, it's only going to build. And I think when you've got someone like Ray Sefo steering the ship, especially when you look at it's kind of polar opposites. When you've got the Dana White machine and you've got like Ray Sefo, he seems like a top uncle that would look after you rather than make your face sore. Do you know what I mean? But interesting with PFL on Francis Ngannou.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. Well, it was wasn't his mother photographed with a PFL t-shirt?
How cool is that?
Yeah. But that's a nice little hint, if it was a hint.
Hopefully. I mean, how would you feel about losing Ngannou to the UFC, to PFL?
See, the thing is, though, I mean, the UFC is still the most, well, I don't think it's the most watched, but I think like, in terms of in the public eye, UFC.
Yeah.
Especially we'll America and Europe. Yeah, anyway.
We'll put it there.
So like having that still as the, so Ngannou, I think it's bad for his like
heritage, like, or lineage of who he's beat.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Exactly. But I think obviously it's a good move for him like financially.
Which is kind of ultimately what, because who does he need to beat in the UFC for us to then go, what, fuck John, me, this guy is next level?
John Jones, really, isn't it?
Does,
That's who he needs to, in terms of like leaving his stamp on the sport as like one of the best ever. And if he beats.
So there isn't anyone else, is there? Like the Stipe's, they're done and dusted.
Yeah, he's beat Stipe, he's beat Cyril Gane. I mean.
Overeem's, all done. So there's not really anyone waiting in the wings, is there, to be like, yo, I am now classed as Mr. Heavyweight.
Unless John Jones comes back and two fight and he beats him.
If you put John Jones back, obviously he's been off, what, 2 years? Is it 2 years?
Yeah, about that. I think his last fight was Dominic Reyes, wasn't it?
Yes. And that was closer than you'd expect.
Yeah.
But would you want John Jones to have a warm-up or would you just want to see, obviously for the timeline, because isn't Ngannou's contract running out soon?
Yeah, yeah, it's January. Okay. I think, pretty sure, yeah.
Like so the now. UFC must be just spinning. Or do you think they've just gone, do you know what, fuck it, see you later?
Well, I don't know. I suppose it depends on how valuable they see Ngannou as like a, well, an asset, I guess. I mean, like as the heavyweight champion, like the scariest guy in the world, like move into the PFL is pretty bad for them.
Yeah.
But because obviously they must value him super high, but if PFL have come in and valued him higher, it's hard for him not to go.
I mean, the thing is, that's the thing. The only thing left over is the John Jones side of things to do. So, I mean, it could always be the one of the ones where he steps in and out. But, I mean, to market, he is such a finishing machine. I know, obviously, the last couple...
Ngannou.
All right. He's obviously finished a load of people. And the last couple have been a bit more important because he is the champ. And obviously, you saw GSP do it. GSP was finishing. Then all of a sudden, he's then more calculated and sort of taking his time because this belt means more to him than the other stuff at the time. So I suppose, is Ngannou just going to get to the point where he's like, listen, his story is fantastic. You look where he's come from to where he is now. So it sort of changed from being the athlete and his story and all the rest of it to now being, oh my God, I can actually change other people's lives. I can use this for good. And I think when you see that in Ngannou, I don't see that he's being a greedy person that's reaching out for more and asking for more because he's unreasonable. Whereas...
Well, he knows his value. That's the thing.
And I think it's a difficult discussion within the UFC, depending on who you speak to. Because if you speak to Dana, he will probably convince you that you are worth...
Screensaver.
Dana's a good salesman. He can let you know that you are worth a screensaver, whereas really you've sold too many pay-per-views. Whereas with someone like Ngannou, you kind of fight in his corner. You're backing him because he's not polarizing as a bad guy or a good guy. He's really likable. And ultimately, you want to see him succeed because his story is only going to get better. But... I mean, I suppose it'll only show if it means more to him for the competition side of things. If he goes to the PFL and he's just crushing cans. I'm not saying he is, and I don't know enough of the PFL heavyweights to be able to pass comment, but if he feels that he's not being tested enough, is that then going to be more of the challenge once he's banked his millions to go, tell you what, Dana, yeah, I'll come back over.
The thing PFL should do is get John Jones as well, because then... Surely that's the biggest fight in MMA to make, I think.
At the minute.
Ngannou Jones.
That would be good.
If John Jones is still coming back, I mean,
It does seem like it.
That's definitely the biggest fight I think you can make in MMA in terms of like views.
Heavy
hitters. Yeah.
Other than like the Conor side of things.
Yeah, of course, Conor. But the thing is, like Conor's... I don't think he's ever really going to be in the title. I mean, he can always step back in, really, I guess, you know, at any moment, you know, because of who he is. But I don't think he will still get the views because of his popularity and because he's Conor McGregor. But and just talking purely like the biggest MMA fight you can make, I think, is
and actually skill-based and competitive.
And Francis Ngannou, yeah.
Mate, I'd love it. I mean, and I don't suppose it would bother me either way if it's going to be PFL or UFC, as long as I get to see it. But I think, I mean, there's not really that many people. I mean, I know that Nate's name is floating about a bit because obviously Jake Paul was mentioning it, but there's not that many fantasy matchups at the minute that we can't make.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But I don't know where John's...
What, do you mean Nate against Jake in MMA?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it would be terrifying. I mean... Jake's quite a big dude, but I'm pretty sure that Nate would smother him. But I mean, there's not that many like real fantasy matchups that you can't make because ultimately they're all going the same direction and like they're all mingling together. But I don't know where John's contract sits. I don't know how long he's got left or how many fights he's got left.
Well, this is the thing. It's still a bit of a mystery, isn't it? Because I mean, I suppose he was set to come back last year, wasn't he? And then just didn't happen. And
because what's the latest news? Is it Stipe? John Jones Stipe?
Is that, well, I heard, I don't know if that's confirmed, is it? It's not fully confirmed. I think that's just rumours, but I still think. Because of John Jones, who I get what you mean about warm-up fight, but I just think because of who he is, and he is the best ever, really, in terms of, I know, despite all the hiccups and whatnot.
All the pictograms.
But, like, he is still has the most title defences, like, hands down the best.
And really unbeaten. I know the Matt Hamill thing, but...
Yeah.
He's unbeaten.
And, like, what was he, champ when he was 23?
Was he 23, 21? 20, was it 23?
Something like that, anyway.
He was 20, early 20s,
right? Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, I just think for him to come back, it's got to be for the title, surely.
Yeah. And I suppose...
because he never lost the title. Well, he never lost his light heavyweight title.
So what if Ngannou bounces to PFL, just runs riot, John Jones sticks around, obviously there's a vacant title now, so him and Stipe are fighting for the vacant title, and then John Jones gets that last fight on his contract. Does he then say, tell you what, I'm going to bounce to PFL as well? Because there's enough big money fights for these people to grab whoever they want at the right time. Because, I mean, I saw something the other day that the feeling is that they're going to try and get John Jones back as a little bit of a, let's make some more noise about the UFC in a positive light to avoid the slap shot.
Right, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, I don't know where you sit on that. I don't know. I suppose...
well, it's an arse, isn't it? I mean...
It is an arsey thing to do.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's a tricky thing with Dana, because I've followed him for years and not hung on every word, but it's very important that he was part of my YouTube download after a fight. I want to know what he's thinking next and the rest of it. But his mind does change a bit like a toddler's. And because of that, he's all in. And it doesn't matter if he's like all in against women MMA and then he's all in with women MMA. And it doesn't matter if you show him a video of him saying the opposite. He's like, oh, that's bollocks. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know if now that the Dana machine has just got that big and that powerful that it just sort of, it just dwarfs everything else that's happening around it. Do you know what I mean? Because I can't think of another world or industry where we'd have an incident where such a high profile person would be involved in like a, call it domestic violence, whatever you want to do. He slapped his wife. No one's really mentioned it. No one's really admitting it. And then he comes on, and this was the bit, because obviously it's nothing to do with me. It's nothing to do with you, but you've always got an opinion. And when someone's sort of involved in that sort of incident, there are repercussions. And for him to choose his punishment and like sort of go, listen, I know I've done wrong. I'm the only person that can live with it. It's going to haunt me forever. But if you take me away, everyone else will suffer. Well, yeah, of course they will. But that's like, if I rob a bank, I'm robbing a bank to feed my kids. So if I do, obviously I'm going to buy a Bentley and all the rest of it. But if I rob a bank and I'm sat there and the judge is like, right, you're going to get sent down. I go, whoa, 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 listen. I already know I've been naughty. I know it's not the right thing to do, but my kids are fuming with me. And if you send me to prison now, I'm probably going to lose my house and my car. My wife might leave me. He'd be like, yes, you dickhead. That is consequences. Mm. So you've got consequences. But I don't know if he's playing along that narrative, because let's just pretend that Dana is sidelined for 6 months. And his crew. So obviously Dana's known for traveling with his, I'm not going to say henchmen, but if you just take that out for 5 minutes and you put someone in his position. So obviously Dana started with the Fertittas. So he sort of carved a niche within his role that has never been the same as any other president of any other organization ever, because it was such a underground sport and all the rest of it. But if you brought someone else in, someone professional or whoever, that ran it, and let's just pretend it worked really well for 6 months, do you think Dana's worried that if they do take him out, they'll actually realise they can cope without him?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's become its own, like, they can definitely cope without him. Like, it's like the Premier, I understand, because he is that, you know, top of the food chain. He's almost become like a
caricature.
Yeah, of the UFC. But like, it's become its own. Like, the UFC is not gonna, just because of Dana White.
That's what I mean.
Like, I wouldn't like, when I was at press conferences and stuff at the end of the fights. Like, if Dana didn't come out, I was like, oh, sad, get to go home early.
Oh, really?
You know, I never, I mean, I mean, it isn't really, he'll comment on stuff and obviously he'll spill news if he's got news and stuff like that, but there's other ways to do that.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need him to be the face of breaking news and stuff like that. Like, I definitely think they can easily cope without him.
Do you think, I suppose for me, because he's such a dominating character of importance.
No, sorry, go on.
No,
it's going to, because some of their fighters are bigger than him now. Like, look at McGregor, you know, the fighters should be the face of the sport.
Exactly.
Face of the UFC.
So the only thing that keeps him relevant is by him being there, physically relevant, because obviously there's always something about him. And because obviously that works for press and for media and for promotion and all the rest of it, positive or negative, not slapping your wife negative, but actually him having an issue with a fighter or whatever, it's always more. There's more about it. So it just builds something else to talk about. So it could be the worst card in the world, perceived as the worst card, but then there's something that they can talk about that he can have, he can stand on his soapbox. And I think because he's so... like fucking outspoken.
Yeah.
That it's, you're always eager to see what his take is on something.
Yeah.
And I think because he's been so passionate in the past about certain things, about domestic violence and all the rest of it, it seems really difficult now to sit and watch it, because the problem is as a man, you know, you can never, ever, ever put your hands on a woman. And you've only got one chance at that. Ever. Behind closed doors, public, anything. Because even if no one else knows, you know. And you know that's not right. You cannot in any way, shape or form ever do that. So once you've lost that token and that's gone, then I'm not saying you damaged goods, but you're kind of marked. And the problem is, to take him seriously and to listen to him and to understand all the things that he deals with and how much impact he has on everyone else's life... Because this has been covered up so shitty and like no one's really like focused on it, and he's then basically come out and gone, I choose my punishment. I smoke the whole packets of cigarettes just to prove to me that I shouldn't be smoking one. It's kind of, I don't know, that I thought that because it's now a public company, that there'd probably be more. But I think what will happen is it's kind of going to be forgotten, or it'll just be brushed as fast as they can.
Yeah, I think it will. Like, and he'll certainly push it to, like, you know, go away as quickly as possible as well. And it's just a fucking idiot for doing that. And, you know, I don't really have much to say on it, to be honest. No, it's just like,
that's it. Because you can't chastise him because everyone knows it's wrong.
Yeah. So, I just don't think they, like, if he left the UFC, I don't think the UFC, I think he thinks that UFC would suffer more than anyone else thinks.
But do you think it's more important that the UFC are seen to do something because of what has happened?
Yeah, because I think the UFC is beyond Dana White now.
That's the difference.
But then they're not, because he's still at the top and still in charge. So it's like they wouldn't be able to do that. But I think they should do that.
Yeah, well, let us know. Let us know as well. And obviously, whatever you think. I mean, there's no wrong or right opinion, but it's more a case of, I have spoke to some people and they're like, yeah, man, it happens all the time. And I'm like, okay, but not when you're the president of an organization and especially not when your new promotion's coming out called, what is it?
Power Slap. Yeah.
I mean, it's the worst promotion for that in the world, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? So, yeah,
it's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, yeah.
Well, yeah, and it was a big surprise to wake up to. And I think, if nothing else, it was a nice Christmas present for Ariel Helwani, because he's he's had miles to ride off that.
But I mean, because I watched Ariel's show, the New Year, New Year Awards, and he did the first half of the show was just, a lot of it was about just topics, but he did quite a big chunk on it.
Oh, nice.
And Ariel, he got quite emotional.
Yeah, he does.
But I can understand why, I mean.
I think as well, because of if we had places to put people, I'd probably put me and you in a geek role, and Ariel's in a similar role that he's chosen to be in this macho world of this it's not toxic masculinity, but it is the fighting world is quite cutthroat. And I suppose for him to last as long as he has, it's impressive that he's got to where he has. Because even before Christmas, when Paddy and Dana were talking about Ariel, it kind of felt like a pub conversation that shouldn't have been recorded.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
The Dana Paddy podcast, yeah. I only saw clips, and I only saw the clips where they were talking about Ariel. I didn't watch the podcast.
Yeah, because especially in the modern world where everything's digital, like I could literally say that you've said something about me, and then you go, "Well, no, it's there. Look, it's on my phone. I didn't say that." Yeah. And I think it's really interesting to see how like a bully mentality can come into something when like someone's had a couple too many drinks or whatever, and like they're G-ing each other on. And I think sometimes when you see something like the Paddy and Dana thing, it just surprised me a bit more than anything that it was how it came out, because the problem is then when you got Ariel sat there going, well, let me tell you, I'm going to put my heel hat on. I'm like, all right, dude. But interesting, man, just a crazy dynamic that it keeps the MMA world so interesting, because there's always some shit cracking off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. It is very interesting. I mean, because I'm a big fan of football as well. Like, I follow football quite a lot, and there's nowhere near as much drama in that, like from a social media. I mean, obviously players have profiles and they still have social media presence and stuff, but I think they're protected by their clubs and everything, and the league, the foundation, like the federation, the FA or whatever they're under. That kind of, I mean, unless they really fuck up, like there's never that much about like...
Yeah, bad stuff.
Yeah. And I think football's kind of gone through that, you know, where it's like a typical footballer kind of, and they're a bit more seen as like, they're not seen in that way, I don't think, as much anymore. And
no, and
I just find that there's a lot of drama within MMA media than there is in like other sports.
Do you think a lot of that comes from, because deep, deep, deep down, Dana knows he's probably getting a good deal. So like when you've got a fighter like Paddy, that starts and he's on 12 and 12, 12 to fight, 12 to win. And he's selling out stadiums. And he's got that same narrative of like, look, we've got the overheads, we've got this. And I understand it's a massive machine. It costs a lot of money. But a fighter's worth is probably triple whatever the minimum start is. Because whoever gets to the UFC hasn't just had a fight and jumped straight in. Do you know what I mean? They've fought to this, which is the gold standard. And I don't know if he's so defensive of it because he knows that people are probably right, really. And it's not like you haven't got a Bellator or a PFL or a ONE Championship that are still achieving and still doing and still growing and being able to pay their fighters a bit more. And I think whenever someone knows that they're fundamentally in the wrong, they kind of get more defensive about it.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's what it comes down to, because no one likes to be criticised at all. And it is very, very easy to sit back and go, you're shit because of this, because you don't always understand everything that goes into it.
Yeah.
But the problem is, when something is a money-making machine and it's kind of public and you can see how much is being made, and you'll go, all right, well, that event's made X amount and this person's walked away with 4-4 or whatever it is, you're like, oh, man. Because even if you look at someone that gets 12-12, that's 24 grand US. But you've trained for 3 months, plus you have to pay your entire, you have to pay whoever you're paying as far as gyms or coaches or whatever. And then when you're in the UFC, they only fly out one of your corner men. And most people, if you can find me a fight other than Matt Wyman, UFC Nottingham, where Dan fought...
Do they still only fly out one of you?
Yeah, I'm sure they do. I mean, I might be wrong. Fuck it. You never know. It happened. But Matt Wyman flew out with his wife. He had no corner team. And he actually beat Paul Sass by a triangle, which was insane. But another story. But they only fly out one of your coaches. So everything's a massive expense. So you know when you've actually paid your VAT or your tax or whatever, and then you look at it, you're like, 3 months work for less than a couple of grand a month, you're putting your life on the line. That's I think why the story is gaining so much momentum. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I think like people like Paddy, I think it's, but you've got to be good at that if you're a UFC fighter and you want to. I think because it is very like UFC and MMA is very much a viral sport. Like seeing on YouTube, it's like social media. It started through the time of social media, so everything. So if you want to be a personality within that sport, you've got to have like good social media presence. And I think like people like Paddy and, you know, like even like going back to McGregor, he started like Mac Life and stuff like that. And it's just like, if you can plug into like all these different like avenues, like social media wise, everything, like it's a smart way to, I mean, people like Paddy, like he's probably got like sponsorships that pay more than UFC do and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the good thing about, I suppose, fighting for the UFC is that it is the most, it's the biggest promotion in the world.
Well, that's why I suppose with people like Cowboy, Cowboy was always sponsored by Budweiser and Monster.
Yeah,
and
I mean, he still is. Like,
which is insane. Mad. Which is brilliant.
Yeah.
But that's only because of, I suppose, he's had the stage to perform to be able to then benefit from that. Mm. And I suppose what the PFL and other places are doing, I think, are giving you equal opportunities to actually get and you on that platform and the pay and all the rest of it. And the problem is, because I don't know enough about it, I know I pretend to, but I'm very often dubious of when someone is so defensive of something and not necessarily so forthcoming with other things that, unfortunately, it's too easy to point the finger and go, I don't think you're right. And I suppose it's one of them things, I mean, whoever's holding the purse strings in any industry are always more precious about the purse strings than anything else.
I mean,
I've never really met a CEO or like a company leader or a president that has been all about the people, because it's the overheads at the end of the day. And I suppose, I mean, it was a surprising thing that happened, but for me, it was more surprising the lack of anything that followed up. It was, do you know what I mean?
You're talking about the...
With Dana, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Well, the whole thing, I suppose, is encapsulated within...
I think he's just fucking up a lot. I just think maybe it's probably best for him just to, like, leave and stop being this, you know, person, yeah.
Angry meme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I go back... But back to it, I don't think the UFC needs Dana White anymore.
No.
Because it's become its own thing. The fighters, I tune in to watch the best fighters fight. I don't tune in really at all for Dana.
See, I can honestly say part of my guilty pleasure has always been Dana's reaction. Seeing what, like his press conference, his post fight, and his pre and post press conference, and any of his... anything, I've sort of always, because I suppose he wasn't as prevalent as he is now back in the day, but he was the one that you had to tune in to see what the fuck is going on. Because if he wanted to go this way, we're going that way. And because he was very passionate about it, he was a great salesman. And obviously, I know everything gets repeated with that fighting, we get it and we like it and all the rest of it, but it's carried him really, really well. Because of me watching it as long as I've watched it. So I suppose for that, I can't say that I'm disappointed. I'm just more surprised. Mm. And I think I'm curious, I suppose within anything, I'm curious to see what happens next.
Well, it's just funny because on that Ariel show as well, when he was kind of bringing up past quotes that Dana had said about like domestic abuse and stuff like that. And... yeah, it just makes him, as well as doing something really stupid, just makes him a massive hypocrite as well. And
mate, within anything, you've got to have a really, really, really fucking clean arse to start fucking like telling other people. Do you know what I mean? Because we're all human, and I know that anyone can fuck up at any point, and obviously there is consequences. And I think, unfortunately, because we live in that kind of world, no matter who you are, you kind of want to see something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
definitely. Not like choose your own punishment, but you want to see something. And I suppose that is where the coin gets flipped as far as,
they should just cancel the power slap.
I'm surprised it's not.
I mean, I thought it was, because I think they did put out someone put out a tweet saying that the channel had dropped it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I saw UFC repost it again, I think a couple of days ago, and it was like back to what it was going to be.
Is that more of a concern about nowadays how people deal with things? Because it's obviously everything's always been driven by money. Always, we know that. But is that where we're at now? Where they go, right, we'll take it off for 20 minutes. Everyone's going to swim around the bowl again. Everyone will forget, fish brain, and then we'll put it back up. No one will know. Do you know what I mean? Because they're not doing it to promote the power slap people or to build a new sport. They're doing it because it's money. And yeah, obviously there's a shitload of money that's gone into those fucking horrible nylon static sweaty t-shirts.
But I feel like it's so twisted that someone in a marketing office somewhere could be like, oh, this is actually a really good promotion for us. You know what I mean? Like, we can use this. It's powerful.
Mate.
Like, use that ridiculous situation to promote it.
If the same person that says, there is no negative press. Well, sometimes there's negative press, man.
Yeah, weird anyway.
So I am on board with maybe the UFC start to drop a load of new interesting stuff to try and sort of get it down. Because it's a bit like negative comments on Google reviews. I had a mate, who wasn't a mate, he was a bit of a dickhead, and he sold cars. And basically, he came into me one day and was like, how many Google profiles have you got? I was like, one. You know, get a couple more, but make it obvious that they're not the same. I was like, get a couple more Google profiles. He's like, yeah, just like whatever at Google, mate. I was like, all right, why? He said, some fucking idiot's left me a bad review on Google. I was like, why? And he went, because the car had done this, and basically they bought a car and it wasn't fit for purpose or whatever. So they were justified because they'd said, can you bring it back? Well, I mean, the car sales world is a whole fucking can of worms in itself. And he basically had refused. So now what he had to do, instead of being able to actually do anything about this situation with the car, he just wanted to bury it. So he just went around all the people he knew and got them to write a glowing review that basically pushed it far enough down that, again, fish swims around the bowl. People see the top review and like, oh, yeah, brilliant. Yeah, no problem. He's not really the guy off Matilda putting sawdust in the fucking engine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, interesting, I suppose. Interesting to see if that's the case, if we're going to get something new coming out. But, I mean, as far as fights, I can't wait for it to start again. I'm just ready to for seeing it.
So what is it that Strickland Imavov now this weekend?
Yes.
Who do you reckon? Who have you got in that?
Strickland, I suppose, just because of his... I suppose for me, because he's been around a bit longer, and obviously he's had five rounders, and he is a really unpredictable maniac. So I suppose head and heart. I mean, I don't know. I suppose Strickland, if it's one of those things where he just shows his mettle and he's just a little bit more prepared. I mean, he's such a surprising dude that the wins he's had have been fantastic, but at the same time he has, like his last one, he kind of got mad at the end, but he hadn't put his foot all the way down on the gas. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I don't know if that's where he comes from, the character, what you mentioned, where he's like, he doesn't really give a fuck. Like, win or lose, oh, okay, if I'm out, I go there.
Yeah.
He's still a really sellable product to Bellator, or really sellable to PFL or ONE. He's still very, very employable. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But he's not got the fear of like, well, if I'm here, I'm here. If not, I'm not, I don't care. Who do you think?
Well, I think this is a tougher... I mean, I've watched Dan's War Room as well, so a lot of it's...
You regurgitate, go for it.
Yeah, and just, yeah, take on that. I think Sean Strickland's going to win. I think it's a tough... I think if it was still Gastelum Imavov, I think Imavov probably would have took it. But I don't know, Strickland... Yeah, I hate making picks, to be honest.
It's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if
I do, if I had to pick one, I'd pick Sean Strickland. I think Imavov's maybe a little bit too early in his, maybe another fight and then someone like Strickland, I think would probably be, he would have had more of a chance, I think. But for now, Strickland, yeah.
And especially the Strickland, because it's the unspoken warfare of MMA, especially with someone like Strickland, because when I mentioned the fight week, just seeing someone in the hotel, and when you've got someone that's really respectful and like nice to see you, really handshake, all the rest of it, is a different beast to someone that is fucking picking holes in you. Like Paddy's last fight was obviously the whole build up. He had more beef with, I want to say tempura, but that's a batter that you put on chicken, isn't it? But you know what I mean? Obviously Paddy had more needle there and he was actually getting on really well with his opponent. Whereas sometimes if there's a bit more bad blood inside, it can affect you, either no sleep the night before or whatever it is. And I think because Strickland's got that and he's really sat into that groove in his life that he's comfortable in not giving a fuck what people think, that it just gets to the point where he flows with that. But that can really rattle some people. So, yeah, it's interesting, man. I'm looking forward to it being back and me getting plenty of stuff to watch and just... overdose on a bit of MMA, because it's weird, because obviously we kind of get this break every year, which actually brings me on to I've got a bit of trivia for you.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So we can see how this goes.
Like questions.
Yeah. So, well, basically,
okay.
I was looking because the first fight of 2023 is not a numbered event. It's obviously Strickland. We know what it is, but
they should always start and end on a numbered event. Do they?
I don't know. I don't know if it's just that lazy getting back into it, just like easing in. Mm. Do you know what I mean? There's not as much pressure because numbered, it's the embedded crew. There's a lot of other elements to a numbered one, isn't there?
Yeah, I guess. It especially the start of the year. If you want to get really excited, like what's better way to kick it off with like Volkanovski, Makhachev or something, you know?
I think it's because they know that we're starved of it.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I wouldn't be surprised if the numbers for this fight night are going to be amazing just because people have had nothing.
I guess so. It does boost.
I might be dead wrong, but I
suppose if they know they're already going to guarantee good views on pay-per-views, but they're not on fight nights, then it's to boost those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I suppose it just brings that up a little bit.
Yeah.
So what I've got, you can either go for, do you want December's or January's? That's your only option.
December's.
Okay. So I have got a list of the final fight or the final card each December from 2018 to 2022.
Okay.
So I'm going to read out the names. I'm not going to do it in order because that would be fucking stupid. But I'm going to give you all of them and see if you can tell me which year they were in.
Right, okay.
So,
okay.
Sorry,
2018 and 2022.
So from 18, 19, 20, 21 and 22. Okay. So the last five.
Yep.
So it's going to be part of our high five, but we're going to start with, so there was a fight night, Lewis versus Dorcas. There was another fight night, Edgar versus Korean Zombie. UFC 232, Jones versus Gustafsson 2. Thompson versus Neil, which was a fight night, and Cannoneer versus Strickland.
Okay, so Cannoneer versus Strickland is 2022.
Perfect, okay.
I'm going to say Lewis Daukus was 2021.
Yeah. So then you've got Jones, Gustafsson 2, you've got Thompson versus Neil, you've got Edgar versus Korean Zombie.
I'm going to say Thompson Neil was 2020.
Yeah.
Oh, these last two are probably the trickiest.
Think about it, man. Frankie Edgar.
Yeah.
Are you going?
No, I'm going to say Jones Gustafsson 2 was 2018.
Yeah.
And Edgar Zombie was 2019.
You got a clean sweep. So that's just fucked my game straight out of the... I would struggle because...
We were at the... the 2021, were we at that one?
So the 2020 was Thompson versus Neil.
Yeah, we were at that one.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we were.
The problem is, I know you were at some of these other ones, and especially the January ones, because all I was thinking was, obviously, there's some other shows that we are bringing to you, and one of them is a bit of a, it's not history of MMA, because the history of MMA has kind of been done. So five guys got together and decided, could a boxer beat a karate guy and blah, blah, blah. And then 1993, that happened. And then Dana White and the Fertittas saved it. And then Ultimate Fighter came along and saved it. Rest in peace, Stefan Bonner. All the other shit. So it's kind of been overdone. But go on.
No, sorry, go on, go on. I'll drop in at the end.
What I did the other day, I was watching a film. It's called Without a Paddle. And it's a really old film.
And
it's kind of cool, but I can remember it coming out at the time. And me and Stace were sat on a Saturday. We didn't have a lot to watch and it was on Netflix. So we watched it. But it was weird how times have changed since now and then that, like, the amount of data you can have on a phone for free and it's a computer that's in your pocket and all the rest of it, you massively take for granted, or I massively take for granted since it's happened, because I can remember getting a phone and there was a certain amount of texts or a certain amount of minutes that you'd get, whereas everything now is all inclusive. So if Without a Paddle was made nowadays, they'd literally go, can you come pick me up, please? And I'm like, yep. And it's sorted. But
yeah.
I couldn't believe how old it felt for 2004, 2005. It's like flip phone, no signal, like cassette music, like weird shit that you just completely forget because you're caught up within the world. So I did a bit of research from 1993 when the UFC launched. So the UFC launched in November 1993. They had one event that year, obviously Hoist won, blah, blah, blah. But for me to try and really understand what the fuck was happening in 93, because obviously I was going into year 8 at school. So I was in the second year's senior school.
I was one.
You were literally born and one. But I can't remember all the stats, but it was something like X-Files was released.
Oh, okay.
The OJ trial, the fucking Michael Jackson was on Oprah. But the new show...
Is that where he started then?
No, that was Tom Cruise. This was the Michael Jackson after the whole... Did you do that with that? And he was
right.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't do that, guys. But what I found interesting was, regardless of whatever the stat was, didn't matter if it was the OJ or X-Files or what the specific music was at the time or a Discman was released or whatever, there was an element of it that I could take back and it would instantly transport me back to like sitting in my bedroom watching Men Behaving Badly or watching X-Files. And I'd be like, fuck, how much shit has happened in that time? So... The show's going to be about the actual year, as in 93, 94, 95. And obviously we could talk about champions that have been and gone and how people came into the sport and out of the sport, but also what was surrounding it. So what the fuck was actually happening in 1998 and 99 in the MMA world, but also around it as well. And I just kind of fascinated myself. So I thought, what more can I do to then help my new show of what was happening with years than test you on that? And obviously you just completely smashed it, so
I was surprised myself, to be honest.
I think once you can top and tail it,
that's purely because I didn't even watch some of those, but you can gauge it off the fighters as well, like, because I mean obviously Jones Gustafsson, that was a while ago.
That's exactly the point, right?
I mean, really, it wasn't. I thought it was like 2015-ish, to be honest. I didn't realise it was 2018.
Which is even scary, right?
Yeah.
And especially if you had a fight like Cowboy, that you can literally see fresh out of the WEC fighting Paul Kelly. But then he was current until last year. So with those sort of like red herrings, you never know really where the what's it is. Because the January ones...
Yeah, I was going to say, do you want to... If you can guess the January ones, should we throw that out to the people watching?
We could do that if you want.
And then
so
winner gets a thumbs up.
Yeah. So, okay. So obviously Google's available.
Of course, yeah. But if you...
Don't be a dick.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Don't cheat.
Don't be a dick.
I didn't cheat.
I wouldn't even show him this before we started because we've just had a bit of a meeting. And I showed Dan and he sort of went, no, can't get them. But yeah, see how you get on. So this is basically the first fight of each year from 18 to 22. So again, not in order. McGregor Cowboy, UFC 246. Also, Cejudo Dillashaw, Qatar versus Chikadze, Stevens versus Choi, and Holloway versus Qatar. So, again, UFC 246 McGregor Cowboy. UFC Fight Night Cejudo versus Dillashaw. Qatar versus Chikadze. UFC on ABC Holloway versus Qatar. And UFC Fight Night Stevens versus Choi.
We can put them on, we'll put them on the screen as well.
There you go.
In writing.
There you go.
So you can see.
So, yeah, you don't have to cheat. If you want to cheat, you can. But, I mean, the thing is, it's more a case of...
I reckon I could do that one. Yeah. I'm not going to do that because I'll give away the answers.
We'll do it afterwards. We'll have a cup of tea and you can do it then. But it's just fascinating. And, I mean, especially a lot of the people that are part of this little community, which we've obviously got, are similar ages to us as well. So they've got kids and then obviously they've also sort of grown up faster because you blink and your kids are 14, 15 or whatever. And you're like, holy shit, a lot of things have gone past. And I think that was, for me, that was one of the main things that when I watched that film, I couldn't believe how far we'd come with technology. Like, I mean, what's iPhone now? 14, 15, whatever it is. I can remember when the first one came out, someone bought it. Yeah. And I was like, is it like an iPod? He was like, yeah, but you can make phone calls on it. I was like, who the fuck would want that? Why would you need that? Or teachers that were like, you're not going to carry calculators around in your pocket every day. And you think, well, times have changed, motherfucker. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
So yeah, but traditionally on the Full Reptile Radio, we did have some random afterthoughts.
Okay.
And I've got a couple for you if you're ready for them, dude. So the first one being, why is it imperative nowadays or forever or the entire time that mustard, as in the condiment, especially in England, we eat with ham or beef or whatever, Coleman's mustard, why is it so important that we save those jars? I've never thrown one of them away in my life. And I stood in my shed the other day and I think I've got like 50 just with like buttons in them, screws in them, random shit. Why?
My dad's a bit like that, but it's more like tins.
Really?
Like he collects tins. Or like,
I collect tins.
You know, like old, when you used to get
tobacco tins.
Well, yeah, tobacco tins, but you know, at Christmas you'd get a tin of Quality Street.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's a plastic tub. You don't get tins of Quality Street anymore, do you?
You know, the worst thing about that is that me being a dad, I have got probably 25 of the plastic ones. And the best thing about it, and your dad will agree with this, the tins were lovely, but they were very big and bulky and you couldn't put them inside each other. Whereas the new plastic ones... I got a stack like that. You need a Quality Street tin or a Celebrations yeah. or a Hero. You can have as many as you want.
But yeah, he's got like, you know, like drill bits.
Yeah.
Drill bits. Yeah, like spares. Of you know, like IKEA spares yeah, and yeah. stuff like that. But never really had jars, to be honest. Like,
really?
No. Never collected jars. I mean, maybe he did at some point. I mean... I don't think I'm in that stage of...
You've not got a shed yet, have you? You've not got a shed. Yeah. You know, the thing is, I don't know if it comes with having children that you need somewhere to escape to. Because don't get me wrong, I love my kids to bits, but they're fucking insane. And sometimes you just need that getaway. No shit. When we first moved into my house, the first thing my father-in-law did was head over and he's like, we're building you a shed. I was like, I'll be all right. I'm all right. He's like, no, trust me. And he is the father of two daughters, my wife and my sister-in-law. And at the time, I only had a dog. And now I've got two girls and three dogs. I'm fucking completely outnumbered. I was like, okay. So he did me an absolute solid at the time. But mate, it's like he's got actual coffee jars that he screwed the lid into the underside of a shelf that basically he just twists them on. So you go in and it's like 50 Kenko jars down one side, gold blend down the other side, and it's like, you need some raw plugs, Doc? No worries. Have as many as you want. It's cool as fuck. But I was more curious about the mustard side of things because I can never bring myself to chuck it. Like other jars, maybe a gravy jar or a jam jar, it's going in the bin or it's going in recycling. The Coleman's, I don't know if that is the king ding of jars, but...
Yeah, I leave stuff on the side for maybe like a couple of days thinking...
I'll keep that.
Not even thinking about anything that it could be used for, but yeah. I'm like, I don't want to chuck it away yet.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of that.
So it's just like, along with maybe one or two stray wine bottles, there could potentially be candle holders. Yeah,
your old man brain is creeping in. It's definitely creeping in. Because would you have done that a couple of years ago?
Well, No, definitely not, because I still lived at home a couple of years ago. But Sue, my partner I live with, she's very, she'll do that. She'll use a wine bottle for a candle holder. I won't think like that, but you know.
That's cool though, man.
I have now. I'm starting to.
Yeah. I kind of dig it. And well, there you go. You can let us know if you've got a massive Coleman's mustard jar collection. Because to be fair, if it's like a Aldi jar or a Sainsbury's jar, I won't keep it. It's only because it's the one with the yellow lid.
Coleman's, yeah.
Right. Last one for you. Last one. And this is for the old retro heads in the group and the people that are watching. This thought came to me when I was a little bit worse for wear. But clearly, I had to make a note of it because it meant something to me. And it was, if there was Thundercats, as in the cartoon, why couldn't we have had Lightning Dogs? And not only that, the tagline would have been, "Bad weather never looked so good." Could you imagine thunder, thunder,
yeah.
And then lightning, 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 like dogs.
Like their, what was like a separate show or like their enemies within the show?
I don't know if they'd probably be an enemies. They would, because like, I suppose. That,
yeah, if I was going to pick an animal to be a villain and be a good guy, I'd say the dogs are the good, right? Good guys and the cats are the villains.
Well, yeah, well, we could have fucked Lion-O off to be a bad guy. I mean, it would have been a whole different show.
I never watched Thundercats, just so you know. I know about it, and I know.
I don't know if you can timestamp that devastation, is. But
I never. I think I was.
You completely
a bit
missed
after
it.
That.
Yeah. Well, what are you now? How old are you now?
So I'm 30. I turned 30 this year.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna have to bear that in mind for my references. But I mean,
yeah. Anything.
Thundercats was one of the solid ones, man. It wasn't. Where I lived, there wasn't a load of footage of it. Like there was some cartoons that like videos would circulate, so you'd have a bit of He-Man recorded because it was always on, or A-Team was always on. So you'd always, because as a kid, I don't think it mattered what episode you watched as long as you were watching that cartoon.
Yeah,
like I had a G.I. Joe video, and the episode was shit, but I would watch it over and over again because I loved G.I. Joe. Whereas Thundercats. It was like, if it was on, it was such a treat because it was such a cool program. And it was, I mean, Chitara, it's almost like finding Jessica Rabbit. You know, the first time as a kid, when you recognize like the opposite sex or the sex you're attracted to, and you're like, fucking hell, why do I feel like this? And Jessica Rabbit fucking blew my mind. And then you got Chitara as well. And I mean, it's all cartoons and it's one of them, but. It's just like becoming a man and realizing that, like, oh, okay, we don't just weigh out of this. Fair enough. But I don't know what dogs you would have used. I don't know if, like, the boss would have been a Doberman or, like, a bulldog or a boxer.
You see, I think the boss...
Alsatian.
Well, I was going to go with that, but I'd say maybe more of a golden retriever.
Okay.
They've just got, like, a Captain America vibe about it.
A bit more Optimus Prime golden retriever-y, like, yeah. Wise.
Like, the yeah, the...
Tough, but wise.
The standard, like, good dog.
Okay, so obviously Lion-O was a liner. There was Chitara was a cheetah. There was Tigra. They were all fucking Panthera, but...
If they were cats of, like, big cats...
You don't really get them with dogs, do you?
That's what I mean. They'd probably be wolves, wouldn't they?
Yeah, Lightning Wolves wasn't the same as Thundercats. Wolves, I wouldn't mind, but it sounds a bit like one of those rugs that you see on people that shop at Costco. I mean, a wolf just howling at like three different moons.
Yeah, yeah. T-shirt shop in like Skegness or something.
The airbrush T-shirts.
Yeah.
Oh, God, mate. I followed someone around the supermarket the other day and they had matching Howling Wolf hoodies on. That were massively oversized. They were wearing old Crocs before they've come back and they're cool again, but like off the like aftermarket Crocs, not real Crocs. They were like Fox. And they had these fucking things. And I was thinking, oh man. And this is a scary thing. You know, you see something like that and your mind wanders. I'm like, I bet your belly button stinks. Do you know what I mean? You know when you get a vibe off someone, you're like, I bet you smell like the back of a watch. You fucking, it's kind of gross. But at the same time, yeah, more power to you if you've got a wolf hoodie. But yeah, let us know who you think. Who would be, I think that the Alsatian might be the kind of out of control rogue, should be a leader,
yeah,
but
exactly.
Actually being held back by the...
Exactly. And then the Jack Russell's like the little angry guy.
Yes. Yeah. Full like little man syndrome. And then the Schnarf. So there was a Schnarf character. And you wouldn't have seen him because obviously you didn't watch it because that shit. But he was like, in Mask, there was a guy called T-Bob. In Thundercats, it was Schnarf. In He-Man, he was called Orko. There's always like a comic relief, like a little sidekick. And Schnarf was this, he was actually a cat-looking cat that was a bit of a fucking tool. And I think if it was Lightning Dogs, which is what we're going to coin it, and it's not copyrighted yet, so don't be a fucker and steal it. I think the comic relief, he'd probably be a cockapoo. Just a real derpy. It's only because I own two cockapoos and I know that they're fucking mental. But I think, it'd probably be a cockapoo or like a full tilt chihuahua, which is voiced by like Cheech Marin or something to go all out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
See, that's just your brain melters, mate. That's literally what Dan's had to sit through for the past 4 years.
I'll write some down next time.
Oh, mate, if I have any odd thoughts,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'll write one down for the next episode.
Well, make sure. How's it been being this side of the camera? Because normally you're sat there.
Well, I've done like a couple of Pix podcasts with Dan. I always feel like, obviously I'm not, Dan's one of the best MMA analysts.
Tell me about it.
You know, so it is a little bit like, well, I think this guy can win because
it's difficult, isn't it?
Punches hard.
Yeah, he's very big.
But, and that, I mean, like you learn a lot as well, like just filming the war rooms with Dan and stuff, and you know, just being part of media within the sport as well. You do learn a lot, and it's nice to have an input, and you know, you can at least like you know, you can watch a fight and build an opinion off it just based off of what you know, rather than just watching it aimlessly and like, oh, knockout.
Oh, wow, flash knockout. yeah.
So, yeah, it's cool. But it's nice being on this side as well. Yeah, I enjoy it. Yeah.
Mate,
it's nice to start this podcast back up.
It's wicked. And like I say, it's awesome because you are always there. So the amount of times when we'll have the podcast and me and you will talk about half the stuff that me and Dan spoke about for the next hour, it's kind of, I think that's what hit us and made us go, well, why the fuck aren't you just doing it anyway? So,
yeah.
I mean, I think Dan mentioned there'll be times when he drops in and out.
Yeah.
But there's footage of him everywhere. So you can get your Dan fix regardless, but at least then you'll have probably another hour of shit that you can comb through and listen about Lightning Dogs and Power Slap and whatever the fuck it was. But yeah, it's wicked, man. I'm really glad that we can record again.
Yeah.
And so, that's it.
Yeah, we're going to be pushing this through through the main channel of Full Reptile as well, but like I said at the beginning, this is a separate channel of just purely Full Reptile Radio, and you know, whatever other stuff that we're going to be producing as well. But yeah, it's good to be back and good to be back on the podcast. Yeah,
nice, man. Well, one thing I did forget to mention, because I don't normally do the sponsor reads because I'm not trusted and grown up enough to do that. That's why I've not been on Pix, is we've got a sponsor. So if you get chance or if you can have a little look, go to newshirt.co.uk. Basically, it's a really, really cool custom t-shirt place that basically have got, they're quite MMA focused.
Yeah.
But they're like parody shirts. There's a cool Kimura one, which is basically in the Nirvana font. But instead of it saying Nirvana, it says Kimura. And then it's got the upside down smiley instead of the big smile.
Yeah, it's kind of, they play on things that have happened within the sport. Like there's like a trolley dash one for the McGregor incident. And then
the Backyard Bears.
The Bears Club for Habib.
Yeah.
But yeah, really cool shirts, man. Yeah,
but they awesome. They kind of say it without saying it. So, you know, I've mentioned in the past, wearing your armor, wearing your tap out shirt or your affliction or whatever it was back in the day, you'd only have to catch the right person's eye that is still into it. And you'd instantly make friends with that person because they're like, you're one of me, you're part of my tribe. And I think like the Backyard Bears Wrestling, it's a really nice design. It's wicked, but it doesn't say Khabib. It doesn't say UFC. It doesn't say MMA. But as soon as you can pull all the Easter eggs out of it, it's kind of cool. Do you know what I mean? And I think if you've got that sort of thing and people obviously see it, it's a nice thing to start making friends again. And it's got cool descriptions as well, really stupid descriptions, which I think you'll dig. So have a look at newshirt.co.uk. Let us know what you think. Get involved, jump in the comments, and yeah, thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, cool. Also check out fullreptile.co.uk.
We should do that as well. Yeah. I've just signed off. Shit. I'll rewind that. We'll just edit that bit. See, fullreptile.co.uk is still... obviously it's running really well. All of your support over Christmas and before and all last year is, as always, massively appreciated. There's currently the sale on. So as you know, as a small independent, we print small numbers of things, and basically once they're retired, we don't really tend to bring stuff back. So if you've got chance and you've got any Christmas money and you want to treat yourself, at the minute there's 40% off everything. That is going to change because I'm going to have to start just clearing up some stock and sort of taking care of stuff and doing a bit of caretaking. So if you want to get on there and get your 40% off, jump on sooner rather than later. And if you did at Christmas and you got any of your gear and you want to tag us in it, then let us know, man. It'd be nice to see the faces where it's being delivered to.
Nice. Yeah. Cool.
Is that everything? Should we sign off?
It's a good time to finish.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Nice one,
see you next time, dude.
I felt like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.